Chapter 16, Judicial Discipline Matters, Because I Said. In this chapter, I'm going to tell you about the Judicial Disciplinary Tribunal that I've referred to in other parts of this book. I'm going to tell you about why the disciplinary action itself amounts to disability discrimination. I'll tell you details about its composition and the concerning twist that saw Sheriff Duff having to be replaced. I'm going to show you something about the backgrounds of those appointed to the tribunal. Then I'm going to wind matters up for this book by saying something about what this and all of the other stuff I've detailed means in Scotland today, at least from my perspective. You remember me telling you that Lord Carloway immediately suspended me from my judicial office as a part-time sheriff when I first raised employment tribunal proceedings against Lady Smith in July 2019. Lady Smith was served with the ET1 form by the Employment Tribunal on Tuesday 23rd or Wednesday 24th of July 2019. This is how an Employment Tribunal action begins. Lord Carloway then immediately wrote to me and enclosed an incompetent minute of suspension dated 25th of July 2019. It suspended me from my position as a part-time sheriff. Although it said the suspension was because of tweets that I'd been tweeting since early May, the timing suggests that that isn't true. The timing strongly suggests, by necessary and irresistible inference, that the minute of suspension was imposed because of the service on Lady Smith of the ET1. Just look at the dates. My lawyers have tried to obtain any communications between Lady Smith and Lord Carloway at the time. Guess what? Lord Carloway refused on some invented and spurious basis. Nothing can be done about that. He's apparently above the law and unaccountable. Section 27 of the Equality Act 2010 prohibits conduct which subjects a person to a detriment because the person has done a protected act. This is unlawful victimisation. Raising an employment tribunal claim is a protected act. Complaining about Lady Smith's unlawful conduct towards me when I had cancer is a protected act, whether on Twitter, X, or wherever. Lord Carloway's minute of suspension and the instigation of disciplinary tribunals was blatantly unlawful. It's obviously a detriment to me because of a protected act, as if the law doesn't apply to him. But no one bats an eyelid when he acts unlawfully, like with Lady Smith. These people are completely unaccountable. The rule of lawyers, not the rule of law. My counsel, Aidan O'Neill KC's view, is that the minute of suspension is incompetent in law. A suspension must specify a time limit as a matter of law. Lord Carloway has specified that the suspension lasts until such time as he decides otherwise. It's sort of like when you were a child and the adult justified blatantly unfair decision-making with, because I said. I've now been suspended for 4 years. It's even more curious than that, however. Read on. It's made all the more absurd by other events that followed the suspension by minute dated 25th of July 2019. Appointments for part-time sheriffs last for 5 year periods. Mine came to an end in June 2020. Since I was suspended and the subject of ongoing disciplinary proceedings for telling the truth and exercising my statutory rights in relation to disability discrimination by Lady Smith, I fully expected that my appointment wouldn't be renewed in 2020. I'd obviously thought about that before deciding to take action against Lady Smith. I was astonished when approached by letter by Scottish Government officials in about April 2020 and asked whether I wanted my appointment to be renewed. I said I wasn't going to decline to have it renewed. It was renewed. I honestly don't know why. And during the currency of disciplinary proceedings against me, at massive public expense. You see, I wouldn't participate in the tribunal, and I won't resign. I've done nothing wrong. I've been absent from work and certified as ill since 28th October 2016. Why should I participate? So, in order to compel me to engage with the tribunal, they undertook to pay for my representation. They said that if I didn't engage by instructing counsel to represent me, they would ask Dunlop to appoint someone. Can you imagine? Maybe Dunlop could have appointed himself. He's in everything else. The tribunal under Lady Dorian, Lord Justice Clark, and career-long proximate to Lord Carloway, Shiny Bob Henderson QC and others agreed to fund senior counsel and London solicitors because I couldn't secure Scottish solicitors who didn't have some kind of conflict of interest. It's the Scottish Government who has to pick up the bill. They've tried to get out of that. That's partly what the judicial review is about. They can't. They have to pay at massive public expense, all to shore up Ladysmith's disability discrimination when I had cancer. The public expense is incurred in large measure because of the resources involved in running the tribunal. The chair is Lady Dorian. She's second most senior judge in Scotland. Lady Dorian is not only way too close to Lord Carloway now, she's a career-long close associate of his, even when he was just Colin Sutherland advocate and then QC. She chaired the Judicial Appointments Board panel which appointed Lord Carloway as Lord President. He then chaired the panel that appointed Lady Dorian as Lord Justice Clerk. That's the way it works. Their career-long proximity was not even an issue, never mind viewed as a conflict of interest, which it clearly was. But that's not Lady Dorian's most sensitive long-standing personal association, which makes her appointment inappropriate to chair a tribunal considering anything to do with my conduct and the circumstances. She's the friend-in-chief of Shiny Bob, Robert Henderson QC. His daughter alleges she was sexually abused by her father and his friends. John Watt QC was convicted in the summer of 2022. Lord Hardy has never been prosecuted nor subjected to any disciplinary or other proceedings to determine whether Susie Henderson's allegations about him are substantiated. The latter is what the whole system has been at pains to ignore and therefore avoid. As you can see, it is very much in the public interest that there should be a forum for that to be undertaken. Otherwise, the whole system appears to be compromised in an important respect. I make reference in the text to the Nimmo Smith report from 1993 and to where it can be found. Nimmo Smith reports, I'm quoting from paragraph 6.18, "When certain aspects of Robert Henderson's financial affairs first came under investigation, as we discuss in part 13 of this report, he took certain precautions. According to him, he expected that the police would arrive with a search warrant to search his house for documents. He accordingly prepared a photocopy of certain documents which he intended to hand to the police in such an event and gave the principals in a manila envelope to Leona Dorian, advocate, for safekeeping. She has been a friend as well as a colleague of his for many years. She took receipt of the envelope on 18th of August 1989, a date which she wrote on it herself, and retained it in her possession continuously until, by arrangement with Robert Henderson, she exhibited the envelope and its contents to us. Robert Henderson had no access to the envelope in the meantime. We looked through the papers and are satisfied that they relate solely to his financial affairs." So given the significant references in my note for the SCAI dated 1st of April 2019 to Robert Henderson QC, it seems obvious that Lady Dorian herself should have declared at the outset of the tribunal proceedings that she was compelled to recuse. Maybe she didn't realise. I don't think so. You can bet your life that Lady Dorian knew about and had read the note almost as soon as it was sent by me to Lord Carloway in July 2019. As did others. Agreement for this appointment had to be given by Lord Carloway. There's a fundamental problem that arises when a small legal system, at the very top where it's influenced disproportionately by relatively few proximate actors, persistently covers up the fact that serious allegations have been made against senior or retired judges. Nothing happens to such allegations and they're just left hanging. Or, more usually in Scotland, ignored, given the silent treatment. A proper system of justice must be able to deal fearlessly, objectively, fairly and lawfully with such allegations, to determine what's established in fact and what's not, and to give reasons for making or not making findings to the civil law standard on a balance of probabilities. If it can't do that, corruption is at large and thrives because of the potential for gossip, speculation and cover-up, layer upon layer, Then the system protects and kicks back at legitimate criticisms through personal endorsements and highlighting the incorruptibility of individuals. That's not fair, it's not transparent, it's not accountable, and it's not open justice. The system becomes necessarily reactive and corrupt, all the time protesting that what it says constitutes the rule of law. The truth is, such a system perpetuates the rule of lawyers. One other aspect to be noted about the Nimmo Smith report is the list of those interviewed. Have a look. It's not clear what each interviewee was asked about or said. However, the list is a who's who of judicial and other appointments in Scotland, many of whom are still active. Beware of name changes. For example, the reporter appointed by the tribunal chair, Lady Dorian, was Lord Brackedale. Under his own name, Alistair P. Campbell, advocate, he was interviewed by Nimmo Smith and Friel. I don't know what about. He was appointed as Home or Principal Advocate Deputy by Lord Hardy when he became Lord Advocate in 1997. From my perspective, Lord Brackedale recommended tribunal proceedings without even considering any legal approach, test or other applicable standard. Just what you'd expect from a safe pair of hands for the job, and without having met with me because I was ill. The right judge. Again. So that's the tribunal chair and reporting officer appointed to consider whether my conduct by truthfully criticising and raising employment tribunal proceedings against Lady Smith for disability discrimination constitutes judicial misbehaviour. Misbehaviour by telling the truth. And you've read the detail in the earlier chapters. The flip side is that Lady Smith is a liar by denying it. Surely you might reasonably think Lord Carloway should at least have investigated whether what I was saying about Lady Smith is true. Apparently not, and you can't ask him why or appeal. He's unaccountable. And remember, he now sees it as a matter of law that all lawyers practicing before courts in Scotland are subject to disciplinary regimes that he oversees. Is it sounding ludicrous yet? In fact, here's a flavour of what Andrew Smith, KC, had to say about Lord Carloway and the legal establishment he presides over. This is an excerpt from Andrew's email to me dated 25th of April 2023 when explaining that I had no hope and should give in to Dunlop. Andrew was at pains to explain to me that even if I have rights, sound arguments and legitimate concerns about cover-up of organised sexual exploitation of children in care, I'll still be falsely criminalised and financially ruined for raising these issues. A quote from his email. Without being flippant, the system that you are fighting is not easily embarrassed. The bad publicity in all of this is likely to be water off a duck's back. The scandal that is the Rangers debacle has been dealt with by Wolf grovelling, paying masses of public money out to some people, then despite the most disgraceful conduct of the Crown and the police, and at least one sheriff, the entire thing was met by Carloway with a shrug of the shoulders, literally during the court hearing, and a, "So what actually is your point, Mr. Smith?" And guess what? Once the judgment comes out, no one actually gives a damn. This email is not an opportunity for me to moan about losses, but I have to tell you that the system will not be intimidated by the possibility of embarrassment. They don't actually care. It is not their money, and they firmly believe that the system is brilliant. Any collateral damage will not bother them one iota, in my opinion. It should, but it won't. They will take their chances and brush any findings against them away as being an inconvenience that everyone will forget about soon. So that's what I'm up against in the assessment of senior counsel. I'm quoting these comments because change must happen in the interest of justice, in the public interest, and for the rule of law to prevail, rather than the rule of the lawyers involved, like Lord Carloway, Lady Smith, Dunlop and others. Don't care must be made to care. And it gets worse. The next judicial member of the tribunal was Sheriff Alistair Duff, then director of the Judicial Institute for Scotland. There's been limited but concerning media about Sheriff Duff since the end of 2021. Described as an ex-sheriff, that's because Duff was permitted by Lord Carloway to retire after his arrest. This is the sort of approach to disciplinary matters that other corporations, institutions and organisations are routinely filleted by the courts, tribunals and inquiries for. Consider the conduct of the churches worldwide. Yet Lord Carloway allowed his proximate duff to retire on a judicial pension after allegations of criminal conduct said to relate to involvement in child sexual abuse while he was working remotely in the Judicial Institute for Scotland. Carloway did not commence disciplinary proceedings against Duff. Why? Carloway must be held to account for his decision. This is very obviously such an error of judgment on the part of Lord Carloway that it calls into question his tenure as Lord President and Lord Justice General and all who know about this and support him. Transparency and accountability. The rule of law. Duff has been credited with developing the Judicial Institute for Scotland as a teaching facility for the Scottish judiciary. The claim is that it's state-of-the-art and world-leading. That's just a claim. It's a nicely kitted out building with a mock court and all, but there's been no objective analysis, there's no empirical data, there's no objective support for the claim, just the usual, like Lord Carloway and Lord Boyd's claims in the BBC Judicial Review that Lady Smith was doing such a great job with the SCAI. Says who? Show us the data. There is none. Empty, hollow words, trotted out as if they're judicial pronouncements or findings. Those comments amount to attempts to hide behind the trauma suffered by the victims of child abuse, and they're an insult to those whose abuse and abusers haven't been investigated. Back to Duff. I was concerned when Duff brought Martin Henry to the Judicial Institute as some kind of expert in relation to forensic questioning of children. The poor quality of forensic interviews with children in Scotland has been a recognised difficulty for decades. Martin Henry was wholly unqualified in this area. Professor Michael Lamb and Dr. David Leroy were there too. They're real experts. The training event was in about 2013. Henry has serious baggage. Maybe he's been unlucky, or perhaps it's more concerning than that. Henry has a repeated history of being in close proximity to paedophiles and abusers. Repeatedly. And an interest and expertise in safeguarding, but from the paedophile's perspective, it seems. Shortly after that seminar, Duff added a link on the Judicial Hub to Stop It Now. This was a franchise of the Lucy Faithful Foundation developed in Scotland by Henry with Scottish Government funding. Stop It Now under Henry was accurately described by the BBC in a news item on 10th of February 2017 as, quote, paedophile self-help site Stop It Now. That's exactly what it was. Martin Henry appears to have moved on now and the franchise appears to be run in Scotland with a different focus. I actually came across a report in a criminal case in Livingston Sheriff Court as sheriff involving child sexual offences in which an expert report by Henry had been produced with a view to influencing the disposal after conviction. Henry has no acceptable expert qualifications to undertake such a report and offer advice to a criminal court. He predicates his claimed expertise on nebulous, unrivalled experience rather than qualification. Unrivalled experience is not empirically and objectively demonstrated. In fact, Henry's CV doesn't appear to demonstrate very much field work at all, and none directly with children or in safeguarding, except maybe at LGBT Youth Scotland, along with convicted paedophile James Rennie. Lady Smith has relied on Henry's expertise in the SCAI. You should read it. Scotland deserves better than this sham. Or worse than a sham, perhaps. And don't forget, the SCAI had Michael Lamb on its original panel. The best in the world. There's something very odd going on when Michael Lamb's expertise is dispensed with and Martin Henry is relied on. Henry was way, way too close to Cardinal O'Brien as his, quote, special advisor on the very matters O'Brien fell from grace so spectacularly in connection with. Advising O'Brien on matters such as boundary violations and accommodating known paedophiles, quotes, in our Catholic communities. All without telling the parents in the Catholic communities. Henry also shared a small office with one of the most vile convicted paedophiles Scotland has seen, James Rennie.
In any event, even if Henry has any expertise in working with paedophiles, that's quite a different and incompatible area of interest and expertise when compared with safeguarding from the perspective of the welfare of children. Sure, there's an overlap, but with a great slice of generosity. Both might be described as child protection, but they're necessarily mutually exclusive, and that separation must be rigorously maintained for completely obvious child protection and safeguarding reasons. Such an overlap is open to abuse depending on the individual. A dangerous overlap. The sequel to this book will focus more on these issues in Scotland. Henry was also appointed to chair the Scottish Football Association's inquiry into historical child abuse in football. He's an adherent of the bad apple theory and the assertion that, in his experience, most child sexual abuse happens in families. That assertion may even be statistically correct, but it ought not to deflect from the need for investigation of organised child sexual abuse and trafficking of vulnerable children in care. Henry's approach tends to divert attention from the need to investigate organised child sexual abuse in a joined-up manner. Even at the time of Henry's influence and participation in courses offered by the Judicial Institute, I questioned Duff's judgment. I wondered and was concerned about the wisdom of connecting a total questionable quack like Henry to the Judicial Institute. Back to the tribunal. At 1724 on the 11th of January 2022, my solicitors received this email message from Ryan Gare, said the 11th of January 2022, 1724. Subject, Tribunal Membership. Dear all, there has been a change to the membership of the Tribunal. Sheriff Fiona Tate has replaced Sheriff Alistair Duff. Kind regards, Ryan Gare, Deputy Head of Strategy and Governance, Judicial Office for Scotland. That was it, nothing else. This was before there was any information or knowledge at large that Duff had been arrested in the previous October 2021. The email message was odd because there's no machinery in the relevant law and rules to allow replacement of a tribunal member to happen. Suspicions were raised. After research and discussion, a letter was sent in response on Sunday the 16th of January 2022. The letter included the following, quote, "We write further to your emails of the 11th and 12th of January 2022, in which you set out Sheriff Fiona Tate's replacement of Sheriff Alistair Duff as a member of the tribunal in this matter and the purported reason for this change in the tribunal's composition. We've become aware that Alistair Duff ceased to hold judicial office on the 1st of December 2021 and that he has been arrested by the police. We've now been able to consider these matters with our client and wish to raise a number of questions with the tribunal and to request documents concerning its constitution. We're sending this letter over the weekend as we have only recently been made aware of Sheriff Duff's resignation by you, discovered the background further to our own research only late yesterday, and the preliminary hearing is set for the 18th of January 2022. Whilst we appreciate you may not pick this up until Monday morning, we ask that this receive the utmost priority. Please acknowledge receipt of this letter as soon as read." This letter was written by my London solicitor. Maybe you agree with me that this is embarrassing for Scotland. I'm a proud Scottish lawyer, but I cringe when I consider this. Other proud Scottish lawyers might have similar sentiments. As you can see, I was being ambushed, bounced into participation in a preliminary hearing chaired by Lady Dorian without the necessary information being made available to fully consider the situation. The letter went on to set out the legal implications with authority in support of the views expressed. Those representations were simply and summarily swept aside by Lady Dorian, the rule of lawyers rather than the rule of law. This is very typically Lady Dorian's approach. You can see this at work in a different context in an anxious child-related case in EV A Child, Scotland, 2017, UK Supreme Court, 15. This case shocked me when I was ill. Lord Brailsford was a judge criticised by the UK Supreme Court for his errors at first instance. This case is utterly shocking because of the vulnerabilities of the child concerned and of the parents. Another professional wouldn't be able to keep a job after this kind of error in any other professional context. Think about doctors whose negligent actings cause harm to vulnerable children and their parents. It's also an interesting case because Lady Dorian attempted to shore up Lord Brailsford's errors by relying on his nebulous, quotes, expertise as the Court of Session family law judge. Surely the UK Supreme Court's analysis and scathing comments called the appropriateness of that appointment into question. No, it didn't. He continued as family law judge until appointed as chair of the Scottish COVID inquiry. And that's another story. As my lawyers and I then discovered, Duff had been arrested in October 2021 following a report to police by judges whom he was teaching remotely from the Judicial Institute. Duff is alleged to have failed to close down his connection at the conclusion of the remote session. Remote witnesses, who are still present online, are alleged to have heard Duff in conversation, which led to allegations about involvement in child sexual abuse. A report was made to the police. The Judicial Office for Scotland has attempted to stifle any publicity, discussion or concern being articulated about this. Allegations of actual involvement in child sexual abuse discussions in the Judicial Institute for Scotland. Crown Office has described the allegations against Duff as allegations of, quote, communication offences. All offences involving child sexual abuse online might be described as communication offences if your motivation is to withhold and conceal the true nature of the allegations. Compare and contrast this approach with the monstering of me. I'm not a paedophile. I have no involvement in child sexual abuse. There's no allegation whatsoever of any child-related issue or concern about me at all. Duff was one of Lord Carloway's inner sanctum, a very long-standing acquaintance of the Turnbulls, Alan and Dorothy, going back to the Lockerbie trial in the Netherlands and even Dundee before that. Dorothy Baynor Turnbull is the Lord Advocate. Duff is a friend and close associate of many Scottish judges. He's a long-standing friend and close associate of Murdo MacLeod, KC, the presenting officer appointed by Lady Dorian in the tribunal. It's very difficult to resist the conclusion that Duff is being protected by his friends and associates, like Lord Hardy before and after him. The paucity of information about Duff falls to be contrasted sharply with my own situation. The Judicial Office for Scotland was entirely forthcoming with information and misleading detail for journalists about me. They certainly made no effort to correct the misleading implication in the news items in the Times, the BBC and elsewhere, as shaped by Lady Smith. Don't forget, this is the authority which deals with judicial matters. The Judicial Office was giving implicitly false information about me, or at least permitting the media to acquiesce in false and misleading details about a judicial office holder, while aligning itself with the misleading media narrative shaped by Lady Smith, who does not hold any active judicial commission. The irresistible inference, comparing the circumstances and approach, is of corruption. Concealing real concerns about allegations which, if established, amounted to organised child sexual abuse in the judiciary, while diverting attention onto me, in respect of whom there are no such real concerns or even allegations. This kind of corruption at the very top of the judiciary in a small jurisdiction ought to be a matter of the greatest public interest and concern, especially when it relates to failures to be acceptably and responsibly candid in relation to the alleged involvement of members of the judiciary in conduct allegedly relating to child sexual abuse and exploitation. Even more, especially where there is personal proximity between the accused and the most senior judicial and prosecution authorities. Section 5 of the Contempt of Court Act 1981 provides, and I quote, 5. Discussion of public affairs. A publication made as or as part of a discussion in good faith of public affairs or other matters of general public interest is not to be treated as a contempt of court. Under the strict liability rule, if the risk of impediment or prejudice to particular legal proceedings is merely incidental to the discussion. The discussion of the difference in approaches by the Judicial Office for Scotland to my own and to Duff's arrest is detailed here in good faith as part of an anxious and necessary discussion of public affairs in matters of grave concern. The concerns are also about the need to fearlessly investigate organised child sexual exploitation in order that children can be kept safe. Any risk of impediment or prejudice to any subsequent legal proceedings in either Duff's or my own situation is merely incidental to this important discussion in the public interest. I wonder if you agree. The Tribunal's other legal member is Jerry Moynihan, KC. Moynihan is a regular fixer for defective Scottish public authorities, such as the Lord Advocate in the Rangers FC malicious prosecution cases. Those cases are monumentally embarrassing, but beyond the scope of this text. Moynihan is a huge intellect and a thorough and safe pair of hands. He's close to the decision makers at the top. Moynihan was also an advocate deputy under Lord Hardy as Lord Advocate. More concerning for present purposes is the fact that Moynihan was appointed as an advocate deputy by Hardy's predecessor as Lord Advocate, Lord Mackay of Drumadoon. Moynihan was, therefore, part of the small and compact Crown Council team in Crown Office at the end of 1996 and into 1997. That's the period of time during which the Jamie Coulthart case was being dealt with. The Met investigation in Edinburgh and East Lothian into organised trafficking of young people for sexual exploitation. The Sheriff Court prosecution was entrusted to Senior Procurator Fiscal Deputy Alistair Brown, a very capable prosecutor. Read the note. Court hearings took place next door to Crown Office and the Sheriff Court in Edinburgh. I know how Crown Office operated in the early, mid and late 2000s. If there was a big sensational case, the senior operators in Crown Office, including the advocate deputies, knew about the main issues, if not the full evidential detail, especially if it involved the Dean of Faculty, since all of the ADs were advocates, members of faculty. The Jamie Coulthart and Hardy and Haggerty case was definitely such a case. The Crown Office contingent from the Faculty of Advocates at the time and Senior Procurator Fiscals read as follows. I'm taking this from the Faculty of Advocates Grey Book from 1997. Details of Crown Office 25 Chambers Street, etc. are set out. The Lord Advocate, the Right Honourable the Lord Mackay of Drumadoon QC, Solicitor General P.B. Cullen QC, now Lord Pentland, Advocates Deputy, T.A.K. Drummond QC, Home Deputy, M.G. O'Grady, Scott Brady, C.A.L. Scott, A.D. Turnbull QC, J.R. Campbell, R.G. Clancy, G.J.B. Moynihan, R.J. Reid QC, A.R. Dewar, Samuel Cathcart, P.H. Brodie QC, Simon DeRolo, Crown Agent Andrew Normand, Deputy Crown Agent Norman McFadgen, Assistant Solicitor High Court Unit W.J. Gallagher, Assistant Solicitor Appeals R.G. Stott. There are very notable judicial office holders' names in this list, past and present, at all UK judicial levels, to the very top. It's reasonable to infer or to apprehend that these people, or at least some of them, knew that the Metropolitan Police were investigating the use of a bank account held by the Dean of Faculty, Hardy, in relation to allegations about the trafficking of young people between Scotland and London. The Met was investigating in Scotland, taking a statement from the Dean in his office in Parliament House, checking diaries at the Advocates' Clerk's stables. Senior officials in Crown Office knew about this. Members of the Faculty of Advocates knew about this. Faculty office bearers, of whom Lord Carloway was one, any full and proper investigation of matters relating to this must include eliciting evidence from the people on this list and others as to what they knew and what they did or failed to do about what they knew and what they've done since then. For instance, when the SCAI was set up with its particular terms of reference, or when they read my note for SCAI dated 1st of April 2019. Moynihan is one of these people. It doesn't require any acute forensic skills, nor any lengthy statement from me to DS McLeod or police about my note. This is simply pointing out the entirely obvious from reasonably available documentation and a modest degree of curiosity. These are just some of the dots that are obvious and require to be investigated and joined, or not, in any serious investigation into organised trafficking of children from the care system in Scotland. For completely obvious reasons, therefore, Moynihan should not be sitting as a legal member of a tribunal in which the detail of my note may be a consideration. That much appears obvious to me. On this analysis, it ought to be obvious to him too. The list of Crown Office senior personnel from 1996 to 97 simply strengthens the stench, at least for me. Apart from Sheriff Fiona Tate, said to have unlawfully replaced Duff, the last named member of the tribunal is a Scottish Government civil servant named Karen Watt. She's a Scottish Government civil servant employed by the executive, deciding on matters relative to the conduct and behaviour of a judicial office holder. Conflicted. That ought to be obvious. At the preliminary hearing on the 18th of January 2022, Aidan O'Neill KC argued various preliminary points, setting out the correct interpretation and application of domestic and European Court of Human Rights law. In particular, Aidan was correct in submitting that the tribunal, as constituted, is not established by law as the law requires it to be. The legal framework and provisions are a mess, and there are major structural issues with the judicial disciplinary regime in Scotland. Aidan's carefully detailed and excellent submissions were simply and summarily swept aside by Lady Dorrian. Two petitions for judicial review followed, as previously explained. The procedure involved in those proceedings is presently winding to a halt, except for the prospective appeals and application to the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg. More embarrassment. Again, Aidan's excellent and correct submissions have been simply swept aside by the judges in those applications, by Lord Carley's inferiors, who are subject to his management and favour, and those same defective disciplinary procedures. The net effect for me is likely to be the crystallisation of the scenario apparently anticipated, planned, and threatened by Lord Carloway, Lady Smith, and Dunlop, as disclosed to Andrew Smith and communicated in a threat to me. These publicly funded operators will use expenses or costs to try to punish and silence me, to ruin me and my family. They will do so without hesitation, as I was warned. These people have no shame whatsoever. Corruption through the rule of lawyers. Unaccountable lawyers. I've now been trying to hold Lady Smith to account for conduct which is very basically and universally regarded as unacceptable conduct towards a cancer sufferer. My rights are simply disregarded as if they don't exist. The othering process. Worse still, Lady Smith has been empowered and emboldened to further abuse her statutory powers in the media monstering. Meantime, the tribunal proceedings appear to have no real urgency for progress. I suspect they're content to have all of these matters hanging over my head and corrupt criminal proceedings. It achieves the purpose that Lady Smith failed to achieve with her unlawful restriction orders. Lord Carloway failed to achieve with his minute of suspension disciplinary proceedings. Dunlop failed to achieve by his dean's direction in favour of his client, Lady Smith. I have been silenced for a while. And the net effect of all of that, the cover-up of serious and long-standing allegations, organised child sexual abuse and the trafficking of children in care are not properly investigated. There is no joined-up investigation of child sexual abuse in Scotland. In whose interests does that operate? Definitely not in the interests of children. Yet massive amounts have been and continue to be spent on the SCAI, to the financial benefit of lawyers. The Faculty of Advocates had never been so busy and never had such massive fee income, significantly from publicly funded inquiries, as now you pay. But if we're going to consider the rule of law as opposed to the rule of lawyers, what the law actually provides for, then these facts seem relevant to me. 1. I'm a judge. I hold a part-time judicial appointment. I'm subject to disciplinary proceedings instigated by Lord Carloway because I'm a judge, a part-time sheriff. If I wasn't a judge, I couldn't be disciplined as a judge. 2. Lady Smith is not a judge. She is a retired judge. She's an ex-judge, like Lord Hardy, and I make reference in a footnote in the text to material supporting that. As such, Ladysmith is not subject to judicial disciplinary procedures. Ladysmith holds herself out as a, quote, Supreme Court judge in Scotland. This is untrue, or at the very least, is stretching the truth to the max. 3. Ladysmith has no powers as a matter of law, other than as provided in the Inquiries Act 2005 as the panel of the Scottish Child Abuse Inquiry. 4. Ladysmith has discriminated against me at a time when I had cancer, a disability. Because I've tried to hold Ladysmith to account for this unlawful behaviour, Ladysmith has repeatedly victimised me. Ladysmith has gone so far as to make unlawful restriction orders under powers entrusted to her as chair of the Scottish Child Abuse Inquiry. 5. Ladysmith, assisted by Dunlop, neither of whom are judges, has conspired with others to falsely present me, a part-time judge, in mass media as a paedophile, person who is implicated in child sexual abuse. They are my opponents in litigation. They know this to be untrue. Such an implication is untrue and constitutes unlawful victimisation. It's also a scandalous abuse of power. 6. Ladysmith and Dunlop are implicated in the monstering of me in the media. They are implicated in the monstering of a judge. Important facts to bear in mind. I could immediately bring the judicial disciplinary proceedings to an end by resigning. I should be able to rely on the rule of law. Lord Carloway, Ladysmith and Dunlop are bullies without proper foundation for their actions in the rule of law. The tribunal will rumble on. Maybe I'll be reappointed in 2025. My strong suspicion is that the press monstering of me was intended to achieve one outcome. Suicide. Was Gavin Dewar attempting to solicit compromising material from me? He told me that the threat of exposure in the media is a tried and tested, reliable means of people management. Ask Dewar. He thinks he's a player. To be honest, I thought he was a wee gossip who made inappropriate and unwelcome advances to me by WhatsApp. Thank goodness for screenshots. I didn't really take seriously what he said. However, I now think that Dewar may have been implicated in setting me up. Weird behaviour. I can tell you much more about that. I'm confident that Dewar won't add to the quality of decision-making or anything else in Crown Office. He was always trying to milk me for information. He was always trying to tell me about who he knew and his, quote, senatorial friends. He once told me that one of his senatorial friends told Dewar that he thought he could go all the way. In May 2019, just after I had re-engaged with Ladysmith, Dewar told me that my Faculty of Advocates emails were being stored and accessed by others. This was so alarming for reasons of confidentiality and security for myself and the whole faculty that I raised the issue immediately with the then Dean and Vice Dean of Faculty, Jackson and Graham. Both responded within minutes on a Friday evening after 5 p.m. Graham had an immediate explanation relating to the faculty's security system. She suggested that I should delete historical emails. I'm relieved now that I didn't follow that advice, but I find Dewar's input concerning in retrospect. I've no idea what his angle on this was, but whatever his angle, this incident is deeply concerning. Incidentally, Dewar told me about an incident involving the bullying by Dunlop of Dr. David Parrott, KC, in about 2018 to 2019. Parrott was director of training in the Faculty of Advocates. According to Dewar, he resigned after he was ambushed in a surprise disciplinary meeting, at the beginning of which Dunlop confiscated his mobile phone. Dunlop was treasurer of faculty at this time. According to Dewar, Dunlop then demanded access to his WhatsApp messages. Parrott was intimidated and gave Dunlop the access code. Dunlop was then able to view messages between Parrott and a young woman, which Dunlop considered to be inappropriate. Parrott had to resign. Summary discipline, faculty style. Parrott no longer practices in Scotland. Othered, maybe even monstered too, without due process having been followed. A final word on the tribunal. I know what the outcome will be. It's not a fair or just process in any meaningful sense. At its conclusion, whenever that may be, Aidan O'Neill KC advises that I already have a sound basis for making a second application to the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg. Aidan advises such an application is likely to be successful, but will take several years to progress. Lord Carloway, Lady Dorian and Lady Smith, Dunlop and others know this, of course. That may be why the prospect of our legal system being shamed by their corruption doesn't seem to bother them. They remain in control. As Andrew Smith, KC, told me, they can't be embarrassed. The rule of lawyers. The rule of law is capable of being replaced, as and when this is considered necessary in Scotland, by the rule of the lawyers at the top, or some of them, at least. The law is what they decide it should be. Lord Carloway's behaviour is the classic illustration. Sometimes it turns on what's convenient for them. Identify the decision you want to make and then work backwards to try to fit the law in to justify it. The decision will stand until it can be overturned. This is the antithesis of proper, sound judicial reasoning. It amounts to weaponizing the law for the benefit of an identifiable, or sometimes unidentifiable, interest. This is an enduring and continually unfolding tragedy. Unaccountable, power-wielding, dishonest judicial decision-making. In my circumstances, it's apparently driven by historical difficulties caused by long-standing allegations of organised child sexual abuse and of illegal trafficking of children and young people, some of whom were the most vulnerable in the care of the state. Society and all of its members, including me, should be able to expect and rely on a legal system and establishment that's transparent, accountable, and which preserves the rule of law in furtherance of the principles of democracy. This book describes the rule of lawyers at large rather than the rule of law. Society itself suffers when any person, for illegitimate reason, can be othered to the extent that universally applicable rights are negatived. More so when any person, for illegitimate reason, and by illegitimate means, can be monstered, as has happened to me. It's all the more frightening when those processes are driven by a, quote, judge, illegitimately supported by the legal establishment. Judicial discipline actually does matter, but that can't only involve the concentration of all power in the position of the Lord President. Then there are no checks and balances. The exercise of power is open to the kinds of abuses I've been complaining about. You might be tempted to give Lady Smith the benefit of any doubt that lingers as to whether the mass media that she shaped about me was intentionally and maliciously calibrated to make me look like a paedophile. As I've said before, we can only know a person by what that person has been proved to have done. When character and natural disposition are demonstrated through proved factual events. If you entertain such a doubt about Lady Smith's intention in shaping the mass media narrative, which many, perhaps most, readers and listeners concluded that I must have been implicated in paedophile activity, then look at what she's been proved to have done. Consider the details set out about what was done to me when I was at my most vulnerable and suffering from cancer. I believe that most right-thinking people in Scotland and beyond want to see justice for children and young people who were sexually and otherwise exploited by those with power. I believe that most lawyers and judges in Scotland also want to see that justice. People also want to be able to have, as minimum standards, faith, trust, confidence in their judicial system. Transparency and accountability in furtherance of the principles of democracy are critical to meeting those standards. I'm wholly reliant on others to speak up now. I've tried my best. This book records some of the details of my experience in order that necessary changes can be made in the interests of meeting those minimum acceptable standards going forward. I have much, much more to say and much more detail to give. So do others. Do nothing and nothing will change. More will be othered and monstered when necessary. You should hope it's not your turn tomorrow. All it takes is for good people to do nothing. For good people to go along with corruption, pick up their fees, rather than actively assert themselves and challenge it. I also believe that most right-thinking people will see that there's a red line that must not be crossed in relation to child sexual abuse. The investigation of such matters, even historical in nature, must be rigorous, thorough, and fearless. We know this. We've watched other jurisdictions painfully set about this task, Australia and Ireland to mention only two. The task at hand, which should be clear, appears to be obscured in Scotland by the need to protect some obvious and some less obvious interests and individuals. The transparency and honesty of the investigative processes continues to be dogged and compromised by old stories and rumours, some of which have a basis in fact. This continuation is perpetuated by the need for the legal establishment to protect some of those whose historical activities require to be investigated. Matters are further complicated by the continuing direct participation in the investigative and decision-making processes by those with interests to conceal and by others with interests to protect them. I'm not a paedophile, yet I've been presented in mass media, fashioned by a judge to appear as if I am or may be a paedophile. I've been judicially monstered. My only obvious offence appears to have been to pursue single-mindedly the need to fearlessly investigate organised child sexual abuse and trafficking of children in care. The vicious response and respondents to that initiative to date are indicative of the nature and provenance of the interests which need to be protected. The Scottish legal system appears to be calibrated by influence of some at the very top to systematically cover up matters relating to serious, organised child sexual abuse and trafficking of children who are in the care of institutions. This cover-up is effected by corrupt procedural and substantive decision-making, which demonstrates the rule of lawyers and interests rather than the rule of law. What's the answer? Fundamental change is obviously necessary and of critical importance to restore confidence, and not just the introduction of a register of judicial interests. Of course that should be done. It's obvious. However, it is my view that there requires to be some radical structural reconsideration of the entire Scottish legal establishment. Look at this newspaper article published on 7th of August 2023, which I quote in the footnotes. The article focuses the continuing predicament of Susie Henderson, the abused daughter of Robert Henderson QC. She has no remedy or even a forum for her alleged abusers to be held to account. She alleges two of those abusers are retired judges. It's in no one's interests that these serious allegations are simply ignored because they're assessed as lacking corroboration necessary for criminal prosecution. Justice is not just the operation of a system. Justice must be related to the truth. The article complains about the Faculty of Advocates having been an organisation in which paedophiles operated. There is a substantial public interest in investigating whether or not that's an accurate assessment. If it is, and in light of the faculty's current dysfunctionality under Dunlop, then change may be necessary. That model's days may be numbered in the interests of justice. Sure, keep the best traditions and principles. The issues relevant to necessary change going forward might be best considered and undertaken in a royal commission with power to make radical recommendations, and which requires, of course, to be wholly, demonstrably independent of the current authorities while factoring in their experience, views, and considerations where appropriate. This model for reconsideration of legal systems has been used successfully in the past. For example, in restructuring the law of evidence in England and Wales in the 1970s and 1980s. It is of vital importance that there should be an end to the proximity of relationships for senior appointments which can appear to compromise structural independence at the top of the legal establishment in Scotland. The position of the Lord President must be capable of being held to account for management as opposed to judicial decisions and actions. Most likely, some powers and responsibilities of the Lord President should be separated out and allocated in a manner that affords accountability while robustly maintaining the principle of judicial independence, checks and balances. Most important of all, there should be an independent anti-corruption authority established with powers to investigate all authorities, including Crown Office, the judiciary, the police, etc. The Australian model is considered to be effective and might well provide an answer to the lingering issues of corruption referred to in this book. Presently, the Lord President, Lord Carloway, is described as the, quote, independent regulator for judges. The Times reported on 26th of August 2023, quotes, independent regulation in Scotland is carried out by the Lord President for judges, by the Law Society for solicitors, and the Faculty of Advocates. Really? And again, quotes, the senators, which represents judges, said it was of critical constitutional importance that there is a legal profession which is willing to stand up for the citizen against the government of the day. I hope this text will cause sensible citizens and others to critically reflect and to ensure that necessary checks and balances are implemented so that the rule of law must prevail and not the rule of lawyers. It's no answer to the genuine difficulties involved in fearlessly investigating historical organised child sexual abuse and trafficking that difficult, sensitive and systemic issues will be laid bare. That is inevitable. However, all children deserve to be protected, especially the most vulnerable and disadvantaged. Effective child protection can only be achieved if and when there is willingness in the legal system to learn from the personal and structural mistakes which history discloses. We will never learn nor provide effective protection for the most vulnerable children by covering up past misdemeanors and failures in the system. The rule of law must prevail over the rule of the lawyers and the interests they prefer to protect.